And welcome to Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. So glad you could be with us, with you for the next 60 minutes. 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We're going to get to your phone calls. We're going to get to your tweets. Let's start with yesterday's festivities as they got a practice in indoors today. Assuming that Mother Nature cooperates, they will be back outdoors today. And a number of people spoke to the media. But let's start on the injury front, Paul. The fact that Sterling Shepard took part in some individual drills on the side, I think, is encouraging after the scare last week. And also Shane Vereen, who addressed the media, says that he's 100% and he's very well back in the mix.
They had upper pads on yesterday, and I think we need to get my mic going.
Yes, I think we may need to turn on Paul's mic. We definitely want to hear what you have to say. I can hear what you have to say.
That is a very rare instance.
Yes.
Event. There you go.
There we go. Now everybody can hear you.
Glad that the gremlins are finally out of the electronics here at the facility. Vereen took regular reps yesterday. They wore uppers, shoulder pads only with the helmets, and he was fine. Came out of practice, spoke to the media, no problems, everything's good to go. Remember, he had a lower leg injury.
Soreness. Is what he was dealing with.
And forced him to miss a couple of practices. So he says he's a full go. He took all the reps. Okay, good. Thumbs up. In terms of Shepard, he did some change of direction running drills, which, of course, is the next step after the day earlier when he ran straight lines. So that's good news. Now, for me, and of course, Shepard has the sprained ankle, I don't think there's any way he would play against Pittsburgh on Friday. Simply my opinion. But Coach McAdoo would not rule it out when he was asked. And that's fine. I'm just telling you what the coach said. I don't think there's much reason to play him. I mean, he knows everything he needs to know. And he could probably play, you know, talking to Amani Toomer yesterday on the MSG show last night. Amani said, as long as you get some time in the second and third preseason games, if you're a veteran, that's probably all you need.
Well, I remember when Hakeem Nicks was hurt. Remember, he got hurt in OTAs, Paul?
When wasn't he?
Yeah. Well, true. That was a narrative throughout the course of his career. But if memory serves me correct, he did come back for that last preseason game. They got him in a few snaps. And I'm not saying that that was ultimately a difference maker, but I think even if you can get a series or two by the time the preseason ends, I think to me that's more than sufficient.
The way Shepard's moving around now, there's no reason to expect that he wouldn't be ready for game two against Cleveland on Monday Night Football, you know. So why push him?
Yeah, it's not necessary. I don't think the urgency factor is there. In terms of Shane Vereen, same thing. Even though he didn't have a severe injury like Shepard did, or at least the scare of that, you know, we'll probably see him. I think what was interesting, go ahead, real quickly.
He wants to play.
Yeah, he did. Well, he indicated that when he spoke to the media. The other thing that I found interesting that he mentioned is, you know, this is like a new role for him. He's used to actually being on teams, Paul. Remember what he's talking about, how he's the young guy. And now all of a sudden, with Rashad Jennings not here anymore, the dynamic of the running back room has changed.
Shane and I need to sit down because I know all about being the old guy in the room, okay? And I could very easily counsel him on that. His deal was that because he barely had live action last year, everybody knows, you know, he had the pec injury, the biceps injury twice, that he wants to get back into the flow of a football game again. Feel the energy, feel the tempo, feel the juices flowing. Get involved in a live game situation. He just hasn't had much of that. If you consider that he barely played last year, so it's virtually almost 20-something months since he's really had a chance to dig in to a football game. So he's anxious to play. I do think you're going to see him some snaps against the Steelers.
And it makes sense. I mean, like you said, in terms of the rust factor, you want to get a feel for the game, whether you're a veteran or a rookie, under any circumstances, just so that you can make a smooth transition into the regular season. Eli Manning also spoke to the media. He indicated that he and McAdoo haven't sit down, and McAdoo even said they have not worked out how much each individual is going to play. But what Eli did mention is he feels that as training camp has progressed, he's been building more and more chemistry with Brandon Marshall and Evan Engram. And I know that's easy to say on the surface, Paul, but I think it's important to at least bring to the forefront the fact that even when you're a polished quarterback like Eli Manning, when you have a new face coming in, sometimes it's the little subtleties that you need time to work out, such as the timing in terms of routes, the mannerisms of the wide receiver to know where their comfort zone is. Those things don't just happen overnight.
Well, Eli was asked yesterday if Brandon Marshall is similar to Plaxico Burress in that, you know, he's big, he's tall, he's got the wide wingspan, the long arms, if you will. And what Eli tried to explain is that, you know, no two players are alike. Yes, Marshall's a big target. Yes, he gives you a big box to throw in. But what Eli had with Plex is something that he's yet to develop with Marshall, and that is the ability to nod your head, to look at a body movement, to have an instinct to know exactly where that guy's going to be. Eli and Plaxico Burress, I have to tell you, you know, it's like Kerry Collins had with Amani Toomer and Ike Hilliard. They were almost connected by like this invisible tightrope, if you will, where they always knew what each other was thinking. They always knew where the ball was going to be or where it needed to be or where the receiver needed to be. The anticipation of the quarterback wide receiver unit is such a critical part, especially when things break down, when there's a pass rush coming, and you've got to be able to make a play. And Marshall and Eli don't have that yet. And it will take time. I mean, there's just no other way around it. So I'd like to see them get some preseason reps. I'd like to see the Giants force feed, if you will, passes from Eli to Marshall in their preseason opportunities. Because I think that's the best way to force feed that chemistry earlier rather than later. You see, if Marshall gets in a game and Eli gets in a game, and they're in for 15 plays apiece, and Eli doesn't throw it to him, then what was the point? How did you develop any chemistry with him? Were you there last week when Marshall ran a route, the ball was about a foot and a half off, and it looked like Eli made a poor throw, and then Marshall, after practice, said it was his fault? Were you there for that?
I did see that.
To recap for the fans, it was a short crossing route. Eli went back to pass. Marshall was coming from, well, I know it's a reverse with the camera, but Marshall was coming from Eli's left. Ran the crossing route to Eli's right. Eli fires the ball over the middle, and they misconnected, or disconnected, if you will, by about a foot and a half, and it just looked awful. And the initial gut reaction is, wow, Eli made a poor throw. That was just a terrible throw. How could he do that? Well, Marshall told us afterwards, no, here's the problem. It's a timing route, and Eli is throwing to a spot on timing. And what Marshall said is he's not used to having a receiver throwing the ball on timing and anticipation. He was more used to playing with quarterbacks who wait till you get open and wait till you get to the spot and then throw the ball in there. And so Eli, who always has tremendous confidence in his receivers, because remember now, on Friday he has that special meeting with his receivers. He's like an extra coach, and they really knot themselves together into one fabric. Eli believes that that's the best way to run the system. So anticipation is a tremendous amount of his game. So Marshall said, I need to know that I need to turn my head quicker, because the ball's coming quicker, because Eli's going to anticipate the throw. So he took the blame for that and said, now that I've run that route, the next time I run it, it won't happen again. I will know. Hit the route harder, turn my head quicker, the ball's going to be there, and I'm going to be there to catch it. That's exactly what we're talking about.
He also indicated that Eli gets rid of the ball in the blink of an eye.
Yeah.
Compared to some of the other quarterbacks. So the quickness of the throw, he had to adjust to things like that. Now, speaking of Marshall, made an acrobatic grab yesterday on Eli Apple where he had the ball deflected off of his hands, recovered, and gone into the end zone. And what also I think was notable about yesterday's practice, they worked on a lot of red zone and two-minute drill work, and the defense seemed to get the better of the offense, Paul, on just about every single occasion.
There were three consecutive end-of-game scenarios that they played out 11-on-11. And the idea behind this drill is that the offense needs to score a touchdown to win. All right, they don't put a score on the board or anything. They just say, offense must score a touchdown. You must go the length of the field. And they put a little bit less than 2 minutes on the clock. And they tell them, basically, you have to drive like 80 yards against the defense. And they give them a timeout. Okay, they give them one timeout, as I recall. And, of course, clock stops for incompletions. Clock stops when you go out of bounds. They do try to play it.
Simulate real game situation. Yeah.
And the defense was 3-for-3 in stopping the offense, which Coach McAdoo was happy about in one regard. But in another regard, you know, you want to get some points too. But as Devon Kennard told us afterwards, that drill is designed primarily for the offense. Okay? It's really to put them in a position where they've got the pressure, they've got to get the points. And us as defensive guys, you know, we can't sack the quarterback in those situations. They don't let us. So, you know, we kind of have a chip on our shoulders, and we want to stop them. And they did, 3-for-3.
Well, I was going to say, if Kennard says that that drill is for the offense, and the offense can't at least get one opportunity, I don't know if that bodes too well for the offense. Obviously, joking in that mannerism. I think it also says a lot about what you just indicated, the intensity of the defense. And that, I think, Paul, has been a big theme of training camp. I think the entire defense has a chip on its shoulder. Even though they're coming off a campaign in which this defense finished top 10 in multiple categories in the National Football League, the number one scoring red zone defense, I mean, we could give you all the marks. The fact that they're hungrier, it seems, than they were even last season. It's hard when you make that big change and that big turnaround and you know that you're a legitimate defense. I'm not saying that this happens all the time, but I think it's hard from a player standpoint, a coaching standpoint, to see something for motivation or to keep that chip on your shoulder. It almost seems as if they easily dismissed 2016 and they feel like they're starting fresh, and I don't think they've had to sell that to themselves.
Yeah, I think you're right. This defense doesn't look like it's missed much at all. I asked Kennard yesterday, what is it that you want to see, generically speaking, not about yourself, but what do you want to see about this defense as you go through the preseason? Do you want to see that the rush defense hasn't suffered? Do you want to see a better pass rush than maybe you saw last year? And he said, for me, just communication. I want to see that everybody is on the same page. Now we're together for a second year. Remember the continuity we keep talking about. I want to see that everybody knows what they're doing and we're all on the same page so that we can be as dominant as we were last year without missing a beat. And that's the kind of mentality that they're bringing in to this, that, you know, they expect to be at least that good. There's no, like, taking it for granted. No, we're going to be at least that good and maybe better. And that's it. And Kennard did say it starts with stopping the run. And this team's foaming at the mouth to hit people. I'm just telling you that right now. He even said, he's like, I'm tired of the small contact we've had with our own guys. I can't wait to hit somebody else on Friday. I mean,
B.J. Goodson's not waiting to hit anybody because he's already hit plenty of people based on his intensity in practice. And we should mention, speaking of Kennard and Goodson, the first unofficial depth chart was released over the weekend, and Kennard, Casillas, and Goodson are listed right now as the three starting linebackers. Now, we have to emphasize it is unofficial. Most teams do this, so you can only read into it so much. But before we open up the phone lines at 201-939-4513, Paul, the one thing that jumped out to me, well, two things I should say. Number one is that Jay Bromley is listed right now as the starting defensive tackle next to Snacks. That was the first observation. The second observation is, and we've been emphasizing this throughout the course of the offseason, I think it says an awful lot based on what that first unofficial depth chart shows about how far the tight end position has come. And what I mean by that, the fact that Will Tye, who started last season, is listed as third on the depth chart behind Evan Engram and Rhett Ellison, just goes to show you how things have drastically changed in terms of the depth at that position.
We addressed this exact scenario yesterday during the show, and simply put, the depth chart is it's a tool for the media to prepare for the game and to watch the game and figure out exactly what it is that they're looking at. It's nothing more than that. It's prepared by the public relations department. It's not actually prepared by the coaches. And so there's not a lot of substance behind it. There's really no beef or teeth to it. However, as I said, I suspect that Bromley was as high as he was because he had played the most games at defensive tackle for the Giants than any of the other guys in the competition with him. As far as the tight end spot, for those of you who did not watch the show yesterday, same situation with Will Tye. If you think about it, okay, they signed Ellison as a free agent, so you know they're going to list him high. You know Engram's the first-round pick. He's going to be listed high. Well, now, what do you do with the rest of the tight ends? Well, Lacoste has barely played at all, despite being here for over 2 years. Jarrell Adams, second season, but again, not much of a resume. Will Tye has caught more passes than any tight end on this Giants roster for the New York Giants. It seemed natural to put him as the number three guy.
Yeah, I'm not questioning it in terms of putting him number three. I just think it says a lot when the starter from the previous season comes back and you think he has the edge because he knows the scheme and he's third on the depth chart. Says an awful lot about the guys that were brought in.
That they acquired two tight ends, not just one, but they went for two frontline guys.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter as we will be opening up the phone lines. We'll get to your tweets along the way as we take you up till the top of the hour. So let's head to the phone lines. We've got Bam Bam on the line. Bam Bam, what's happening?
What's up, fellas? How we doing today?
Doing all right, Bam Bam. What do you got for us?
You know, can't wait for Friday. One of the main things I really want to see Friday is something that you really just can't evaluate in camp is the play of the running backs behind Perkins, because I'm interested to see Gallman play. One thing that really concerns me about this team, you think back to the 07 and the 11 runs, is they had two backs you knew that could get that tough yard. I don't know that Perkins is that guy. He's a little more top-heavy. He doesn't seem to have the power in his legs. So I'm really interested to see Wayne Gallman. You guys are there at practice. Does he seem like he's a guy that can run with that kind of power, or is he more of a kind of a every-down, more versatile back similar to Perkins?
To be determined at the NFL level. He did it at Clemson, but this is the pro football now, so it's a different story. Darkwa is the guy who has the best resume to do what you're asking. He's done it before in the NFL, albeit with a small sample size because he's been hurt and obviously deep on the depth chart with the Giants. But I don't think there's any question that, in my mind, he would be the lead candidate for the power back, the short yardage back, the goal line back that you're talking about. Whether or not Gallman's able to do it at the NFL level and wrestle that away from Darkwa remains to be seen. That's why they're going to play the preseason.
That could be something, too, that maybe a cut around the league towards the end of camp that could come in. Last question to let you guys go because I kind of got to get back to work here. But last year the Giants did not run one play out of a goal line set. I know they did some live drills the other day. Did they get into a traditional goal line set the other day?
They have had very little goal line drills. They run short yardage drills. In the old days, before the new CBA came into effect several years ago, they actually used to line up inside the two. And you'd see jumbo packages, and you'd see the goal line defense in there. And guys would hit. And when I say hit, you could hear the explosions of the helmets and the shoulder pads from all the way across the field. I mean, it was like kaboom, like fireworks almost. And that got stopped with the new CBA. So they're not running true goal line stuff anymore. That went by the boards years ago.
Have they been line set even like versus air, where you've seen them line up like they can run out of it? Because they have the personnel this year to actually line up and do it. Last year, it made me sick to my stomach seeing them in three wide receiver sets on the two-yard line. I know, Paul, that had to make your skin crawl,
it's
too.
It's not my preference for sure. No, we've seen them run double tight ends. We've seen them run Ellison and then using Engram as an H-back. We've seen them use Huseman, the free agent fullback, a lot of times in those short yardage lined up schemes that you're talking about. But I think the important thing to understand is that you can't practice that goal line stuff like you used to. I mean, lining them up against air means nothing to me. I mean, I appreciate what you're saying. You want to say, well, are they doing it? Well, yeah, but it means nothing if they're going up against nobody.
Well, at least it tells me that it's in the plans for this year. But, guys, thanks for taking my call. Well, again, appreciate the show. It keeps me busy during the workday.
Cool.
And hopefully I'll see you at camp one of these days coming up.
All right, Bam Bam. Appreciate the phone call. You know, the other running back that we haven't talked much about, and this is mainly because he's on the pup list, but, you know, Sean Drone, to me, has some toughness to him from how he was utilized in previous stops. I'm not saying that, you know, if he's healthy and he does make the team that he would be a goal line back. I just would have been a little bit intrigued to see, you know, what he could do in that type of role. The problem is, if you're not healthy, it doesn't really make a difference. Got to get on the field in order to show it.
He's on PUP, and yeah. I have not heard any indication as to when they expect him off.
But I still think that Paul Perkins can be used in that type of situation. You know, whether or not he can truly be effective every single game remains to be seen, but I would not shy away from saying if we're down in the goal line, you know, perhaps we'll have an opportunity to see what he could do.
You think he's a push-the-pile back?
I would not have a problem at least toying with it. I wouldn't be against it just because I look at his stature and I say, well, there's other running backs on the roster that I think could be more effective. You don't know until you at least throw him out there.
I think we know Darkwa is better suited for that.
And I don't disagree with that.
And he should get the first shot. And if he can do it, he should keep the job.
But I also think that it's good to be versatile and show teams different looks because it's the old story. If Dark was in, then you can maybe sometimes become predictable and, okay, we know he's in. We know the style of runner he is. We know how they like to utilize him. If Perkins is in, maybe they dump it off to him, off a pass or something like that. There's a little bit more versatility that Perkins brings to the table.
See, my only counter on that, and I appreciate the versatility argument, you know how I feel, the old Lombardi thing. You know, keep it simple. And we don't care if you know what we're going to run.
Yeah.
We're going to mash you anyway. And that's power football.
No, and I love that philosophy too, and I have nothing against that.
Execute.
I guess part of my philosophy is also, you know, for the sake of an injury that you can't predict, it's better to have everybody well prepared to be utilized.
No doubt.
Off of the goal line sets.
Well, you know, I think that's why Goleman's 17 rushing touchdowns last year at Clemson becomes very intriguing.
Yeah.
Because he did that in college. And maybe, you know, he can add that to his NFL resume, too. We just don't know.
He's certainly capable of it based on what he did at college.
He sniffs the end zone.
That's not an issue. The question is, can he be as effective in an NFL scheme? And we're not going to know that until at least maybe he gets an opportunity in the preseason when you're going to see the opposition actually try to hit these guys at the line of scrimmage, because, I mean, when you see some of these drills even, I'm not saying that these players are not playing hard, but there's only so much that you could take away. And, you know, from just watching a few practices, for example, you know, Jay Bromley's been getting a lot of penetration, you know, just from watching him closely in some of those drills. Now, I'm not saying that that speaks bad about the offensive line, but I just would like to see some of these guys go up against competition that has not put on a blue uniform just to see where they are in terms of their progressions.
That's why we need to watch the preseason games closely.
Indeed. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. David is in Connecticut. David, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Doing well, Dave. Hi. What do you have for us?
First question. I'm on my way. I'm on the highway. I'm thinking of going to Giants practice for the first time, but I didn't see anything. I know it rained and poured yesterday. Is it open to the public today or no?
It is open to the public, and we haven't heard anything about a potential cancellation or movement inside. So I would say as of right now, you should be okay to head on over here.
Great way to spend my birthday, just FYI. But anyways, just wanted to, guys, my question is, you know the saying, you're only as strong as your weakest link. And I'm trying to think or pose the question, what is our weakest link? And to me, right now, it seems like maybe our kicker being so uncertain, being either a rookie or, you know, experienced veteran, didn't do so well last year. Or linebacker depth, because to me it doesn't seem as deep with the most quality linebacking core. But I want to pick your brains and see where you think our real weakest link in the armor is here.
I'd like to rephrase the question. I don't know that there's a weakest link. I think there are some questionable links. We don't know if Aldrick Rosas is a weakest link. We don't know what he is in an NFL game yet. So I think it's unfair to label him a weakest link. You could label him the most questionable link, if you like. You could label the fourth corner one of the most questionable links.
Yeah, I was going to throw that one out. That's a good
one. You know, Valentino Blake is a veteran. Michael Hunter is being coached up as a youngster. I don't know what the answer is there, but to identify that as a weak link, no, I think it's a questionable link. That's how I like to phrase it. And that offensive line is still a questionable link until they prove in an NFL game that they are on the way up. Like, I think they are, but we don't know.
Yeah, areas that have yet to be solidified on the team, I think, is another way that we could certainly label what we're talking about. The fourth cornerback depth is probably the one that I'd put at the top of the list. As far as the kicking game is concerned, I always say we could talk all you want about Mike Nugent and Aldrick Rosas until we see a game. You know, that's when the conversation really starts, regardless of what they show in practice. But fourth corner is where I would start. And then also, I think, defensive linemen next to Snacks. You know, that's an area where we're still waiting to see who emerges, who's going to be that consistent weapon. That would be, I think, number two on my list.
Yeah, I don't think the Giants have any weakest links per se. In the truest definition of the word, when you say weakest link, that basically means you look at the position and neither of the options is any good. The Giants don't have any of those spots. At every spot, they think they have a potential answer. They just aren't sure. That's a lot different than saying, you know what, these guys aren't very good. We better look at the waiver wire because somebody from the outside is the only answer for us. That's a bad position to be in, and the Giants have had that in some recent years at some positions, and it's not good. I would add one thing. I was saying to somebody at practice yesterday, and I don't mean disrespect to Justin Pugh because I love the guy's versatility. I love his talent. I love his skill set, his effort, his leadership. I love all of that. But think about this for just a second. If Ereck Flowers gets hurt, the Giants are forced to make two moves on their offensive line. Pugh's going to have to move out to left tackle, and then Fluker's going to have to come in at left guard. So you're going to have to change two-fifths of your offensive line, which you never really want to do if Ereck Flowers gets hurt. So you could certainly make an argument. And by the way, left tackle's not Pugh's best position, and he hasn't played very much of it either since Syracuse. You could make an argument that Ereck Flowers is one of the most valuable Giants that must stay away from injury because of the ramifications of an injury to him. Certainly, same thing with Eli Manning. If Eli Manning gets hurt, the ramifications are there's quite a drop-off to the second-string quarterback, no matter who wins it. If B.J. Goodson gets hurt, same thing.
And I totally get what you're saying. For me, it was you call it questionable, I said uncertainty. For me, it's a huge drop-off in linebacker from the first, you know, and like I said, it's all God forbid if Pugh gets hurt, if Eli gets hurt. But B.J. Goodson, then it drops down to Herzlich. And, I love the Herzlich and who he is and his character. But to me, isn't there a big drop-off there?
Yeah,
question. Would you disagree with that?
No, Herzlich has proven to be a solid special teams player. And he proved that when he took snaps in the defense, he was better at weak side linebacker than he was in the middle. And right now, he's the number two middle linebacker.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's a tough spot, too.
Well, and then you combine that with the fact that, you know, we don't know who is ultimately going to win the starting job next to Snacks. And remember, that other defensive tackle is the first line of defense when you stop the run, and then the middle linebacker is the next guy up. So he relies heavily on the players that line up in front of him. So the dynamics, God forbid, if you lose your starting middle linebacker, where you'd have pretty much a first-timer starting a defensive tackle, and then a newer face also at the middle linebacker spot, you have to think about how the dynamics are impacted between the defensive line and the linebacking core.
And this is why I want to make very clear to folks that when they say, well, why don't the Giants go get this guy? They have some salary cap money left. No, this is why you hold on to that small cushion that you have of salary cap money as you go into the season, because you don't know if all of a sudden, you know, somebody like B.J. Goodson goes down, maybe you put in a phone call to Kelvin Shepard, and now he's a veteran. And he's going to require a certain amount of money. All of a sudden, you got to tap into that little reserve that you've had, and you got to go grab somebody.
That's the Chase Blackburn school of thought.
Exactly.
That's what it is. It's knowing that somebody's out there that's familiar with the system that perhaps you could toy with bringing back. And, you know, not that they're anticipating that, but it never hurts to at least have somebody like that in your back of your mind, and you have the resources to pay them.
Yes. You need to have a small cushion of salary cap money, because if you think you're going to be a contender, you want to be able to go out and buy that key veteran to fill a spot should it come open.
Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in here, Dave. 201-939-4513. You got it. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Plenty of positions that are up for grabs in terms of the roster, whether it be as a starter position as well as on the back end. And some of the ones that we just threw out are some of the ones to certainly watch as we move through the preseason. Let's head back to the phone lines. We got Carl in Syracuse. Carl, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well, guy. How's everything with you, Carl? What do you got for us?
Pretty good. So I was watching some of the, you know, some of the practice highlight videos from the last couple days, and I saw a pretty interesting play where Paul Perkins was kind of running up the middle and went to kind of dance to the left, and Landon Collins wasn't fooled at all, and it looked like if it was going full speed,
yeah,
he would have put a pretty good look on him.
Good look on him from what I remember from that highlight. I think Landon Collins made his presence felt on that play.
Yeah, absolutely. That was an interesting play to see. I can't wait to see Landon Collins get back on the field, heat-seeking missile.
He has enhanced his anticipation skills in his third year in the league, at least from what we can see at training camp. He always seems to be around the ball. Always. I mean, even more so than last year. I think he's just going to have a stellar, stellar season. Maybe this year he'll get the Defensive Player of the Year. Last year he was a finalist. I think he's getting better.
That'd be great. I have a question about the special teams unit, too. I see on the return team, do they rotate some of the back-end players that they're trying in the return game?
In terms of return men, yeah, they've rotated a few different guys.
Yeah, and in fact, one of the guys we've seen in the rotation is Travis Rudolph. He's been fielding punts, and a lot of them, and so they're giving him every opportunity to earn a spot on special teams.
And that track runner is also in the mix. Snead, is it?
Kevin Snead left practice early yesterday. They didn't mention exactly what it was that caused him to do so, but you know, he's had trouble fielding punts. He's had some difficulty learning the routes and the playbook. He had minimal college experience. I get the 4.22. And believe me, his speed is blinding fast. He really is. Again, my thinking, there's value to have a guy like that on the practice squad because you can't teach speed.
Right.
That would be, to me, the most likely scenario.
And what about Poe? Is he not as much of a special teamer as Rudolph?
Darius Powell, by the way. A lot of people keep calling him Poe. It's Powell.
Sorry about that, Powell.
I checked it with him. It is Powell. Darius is what, like 6'4", 220, okay? He's a big guy. He's more along the lines of a Brandon Marshall style of receiver. Doesn't have great speed. So how is he going to win a job on this team? Well, he's going to do it by showing he's tough, he's got terrific hands, he's going to be disciplined and mentally very, very smart on the football field, and he's going to have to play special teams. Now, they had him out there on some of the kick coverage units during practice. But I can't honestly say to this point he's done anything eye-opening in that fashion.
In some of the roster, early rosters have come out, like predictions for the starting lineup or for the 53. Would you think Rudolph not make that lineup?
Well, there's a lot of competition on the back end at the wide receiver spot. I mean, once again, we have to see Travis Rudolph in the preseason before I think we come to any conclusions. Keep in mind, Roger Lewis and Tavares King had standout preseasons last year. And that, to me, was a big reason that put them over the top as to why they grabbed the final two spots in the receiving corps. Also, let's not forget, depending on how many tight ends they keep, I think could also impact how many wide receivers they keep. And this is pure speculation on my part, but I went back, Paul, and I looked at some of the previous final 53s. Years that they kept four tight ends, sometimes they kept five wide receivers. They did not necessarily keep six wide receivers. So you can't overlook that. And if they only keep five wide receivers because they're going to go with the fullback and the extra tight end or something like that, that's going to make it even much more difficult for somebody like Rudolph or Powell or any of these other guys to make the roster. Don't overlook that.
Those three positions, tight end, fullback, wide receiver, are going to be involved in a numbers crunch. It's that simple.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think it's important that they go out there, they make some statements and appreciate the phone call, Carl. But, you know, similar to Darius Powell, if you can make the practice squad, you become familiar with the system, you know, that could give you a leg up also in terms of somebody gets hurt during the course of the regular season. Paul, even though the team did well last year, we saw a lot of players called up from the practice squad during the season, too. Let's not forget about that.
It's going to happen.
Love the show.
You got it, Carl. Appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Look, to just get down to the bare bones here, because training camp is what it is now and scaled back over the last several years since the last CBA, the preseason snaps that you get in those games become multiplied over and over again when the coach does his final grades and makes those final cuts with the GM. Okay? The game snaps are significantly more important than the practice snaps, and they have to be. So, you're asking us, can Travis Rudolph make the 53 or not? I think he's capable of making the 53. I like his chances to make the 53. But he's got to go out and earn it in those four preseason games.
I'm with you. I certainly think there's upside. But once again, if they go to five wide receivers, I think his chances are going to be quite difficult under those circumstances, Paul. Because I'm just trying to do the math in my head. I mean, we know the top three. That's not even up for debate. And Dwayne Harris is making this team, as far as I'm concerned, unless there's some drastic turnaround on the special team side. And he goes into that wide receiver category. At least that's how they have been viewing him. So then if they keep five, then you're talking about Tavares King and Roger Lewis, let's not forget about it, who have an edge because they were on the team last year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, King has been sidelined with an ankle injury, so you never want to see yourself on the sideline when you know there's other people vying for your spot. The emergence of Darius Powell, of course, because of what he did on the practice squad last year. And then we get to a guy like Travis Rudolph. I mean, when you look at the options, we could have four guys fighting for one spot, Paul.
Go out there and earn it.
Yeah. I mean, but the competition.
That's all I'm going to say. It's good to have competition.
It
brings out the best in
everybody.
And the winner will deserve it. It's that simple. The winner's going to deserve it. And there's only three guys. I'm still going to put Harris in the special teams category because I don't think they want him to play wide receiver, but I understand your point. But you know that Shepard, Marshall, and Beckham are making the team. That's in cement. Okay, that's in cement. So push those guys aside, and everybody else, you got to fight. That's it. Fight. You want it? Go get it.
And I also, if I'm the coaching staff, at least, Paul, I'm not overlooking what Tavares King did last season. I think he had a very strong finish to the season when he was given opportunities on the field. He's also a polished veteran compared to the rest of the group. We forget, Tavares King has been around the league before he settled in with the Giants. So I need to take that into consideration. Or are you a believer that you don't put much stock in that? Because I can't just dismiss that, I guess, is what I'm saying.
I can't dismiss it, but I also can't ignore the fact that his special teams resume is virtually invisible. And that's something you got to be able to do at the back of the depth chart.
Now, it's important to note, before he went down, they were utilizing him in special teams
they
in terms of practice. Now, you got to see it in the game, but they were. They were working him in, though.
Got to give a chance.
Yeah.
Again, compete. I love competition. Because you want to believe that the guys who deserve it, the guys who will earn it, will make the team and help you get better. I'm not for, I want this guy to make it because of this. No, I want this guy to make it because he won the job. That's what I'm about. Win the job. If you went out there and won the job, I'd be happy that you won the job.
All right, I'll try to see if I can have that come to
fruition. It's not about names. It's not about personalities. It's about production. Go win the job.
All right, let's head back to the fold lines. Lance Widdell, Paul Dottino with you here on the latest edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live, getting you set for practice, the latest storylines, the depth chart. Richie is on Long Island. Richie, what's happening?
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hi. Hello, Richie. What do you got for us?
Not much. I went to training camp last week on Wednesday. It was a really good experience, you know, just cut short by weather, you know, things out of people's control. But what I was interested in, like, seeing the competition is, you know, the cornerback depth. You know, is it going to be Michael Hunter, Michael Thompson, Dante Dion, you know, or Valentino Blake, you know, one of those guys, you know, that step up, you know, like Paul was just saying with the competition part. I don't know. I mean, it's hard because, you know, they haven't played a preseason game yet. But is there any specific ones that maybe stick out to you yet that have maybe stepped up?
Coach McAdoo was asked the other day specifically, in fact, I think it was two practices ago, who on the depth chart at cornerback has stood out for you? He came up with Michael Hunter, who has shown some ups here during the offseason. He came up with Dante Dion,
yeah,
who everybody just loves this kid. And, look, if only he had another inch or two of height to his frame, I mean, that'd be, it'd be a no-brainer.
Well, Spang spoke highly of him last training camp, too.
And he did speak of Valentino Blake.
Yeah, those were the three.
Did Coach McAdoo. He mentioned those three guys. So,
okay.
So those three probably have an edge over anybody else who's in camp at the position. But I would say to you, based on my eyewitness accounts, and I can't tell you exactly what the coach is doing in his grading system in the back room. That's not up to me. But based on my sideline view, I would say that Hunter and Dion have been better than Blake.
Hunter,
yeah,
Hunter's the bigger corner.
I've seen, like, from some highlights that I've seen from Michael Hunter, I really like what I've seen out of him. I mean,
but see, Hunter's not a slot now. Hunter's outside, and Dion is a slot, but he's not outside. So Hunter and Dion, it's very difficult for those guys to be in a competition because they're totally different styles of corners. One guy simply is a slot guy, and the other guy is an outside guy. I don't see them as being interchangeable in any way.
I also wouldn't overlook the fact that if they did suffer an injury and DRC couldn't play the slot, moving Eli Apple inside is an option, and then maybe using like a Michael Hunter on the outside is something that they could also look into, as opposed to just saying, uh-oh, DRC's hurt, we now have to have the slot guy off the bench. They could always move one of their starters around.
If they feel that good about Dion, maybe he does.
Of course, no, I'm not overlooking that as well. That's a definitely a possibility, but I'm saying that Eli Apple's versatility is something that they could take advantage of as well. But to me, I think Hunter has been the standout. I think if you look at what's been on the field, you also hear what the coaches have to say. I wouldn't dismiss the fact that his experience from last year also is something that was encouraging for them, and Dion too. I mean, he jumped out last preseason because Spags loves his work ethic. Just absolutely loves his work ethic. He's a guy that will not back down regardless of the circumstance. But, you know, let's not forget that Bills preseason game last year, Dante Dion. Now, in fairness, even Spags admitted he didn't necessarily put him in a great spot, but they went at him on two consecutive plays because they immediately knew they had a significant height advantage there.
Outside, one-on-one coverage with no help against a guy who was like 5 inches taller than he was. He had no chance.
It's understandable.
And for the most part last season, how many cornerbacks did the Giants usually keep? Was it like around five or six?
You're usually going to keep six, you know, no more than that, because you're going to keep three, maybe four safeties. You know, you're not going to go more than 10 defensive backs. You know, you could go as few as nine. A lot of guys will go nine.
Depending on if a safety can play corner. I mean, the versatility factor helps, too. Now, speaking of the versatility factor, Ben McAdoo was asked about Michael Thompson the other day. He did say he's had his ups and downs, like any player who's trying to transition, and that's the thing. Thompson's now going back to a position he played in college.
Somewhat. He was still primarily a safety.
He was, but they did use him as a slot corner at Texas.
They did.
So he came to the Giants as a safety. Now they're moving him back to corner.
But he's outside. He's not slot now.
But because
another
been,
new position,
which exactly is another transition. But the other thing that Ben McAdoo mentioned is he said the reason why they also wanted to move him back there is they figured the best way for him to make the roster was by moving back to corner. So I think that also says perhaps how they feel about their safety position at this point. If they say that the best way you can make the roster is to move to corner.
At best, he would have been the fifth safety coming at the camp.
And out of the corners, which ones are practice squad eligible?
Well, Dante Dion is practice squad eligible, certainly. Let me see.
Okay.
I believe Michael Hunter should still be practice squad eligible, too.
I think so.
Because remember, you could put guys on the practice squad that had minimum of two seasons or two log seasons based on the minimum of playing six games in each campaign. So that gives them flexibility, I believe, with Hunter, with Deion certainly. Valentino Blake's not an option. Deshaun Amos is an option, who's a rookie out of East Carolina. Nigel Tribune is an option, who's a rookie out of Iowa State. They got a few.
Not be an option because, I mean, because just he was injured for 2 years. He never, I don't think, ever even played a regular season game.
Who'd you mention?
Michael Thompson. Is he practice squad eligible?
You know, he may still be, but you know what? I have to look into, even if you're hurt, it also depends on if you're on the roster.
Yeah.
You sometimes become ineligible despite how many games you play.
And here's the problem.
I'd have to look that up for
they
confirmation.
They do tend to tweak the practice squad rules every couple of years.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to be honest with you, flat out, it's hard to keep track. And what I usually do when it gets to the final cutdown week, I go and I check with somebody from the league and I say, okay, look, I need a refresher on this. What exactly are we looking at this week as these final cuts get made so that I have a really good idea of what could happen with the practice squad? Up until that time, I'm really not thinking about it because there's no point. I'm just trying to grade these players based on what I'm seeing. I'm not thinking right now necessarily practice squad, you know. I mean, we talk about it sometimes and we throw it around, but you don't really focus on it till the final week of cuts.
All right. Thanks, guys. That was pretty much all I have. You guys have a good day.
All right, Richie. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. Jason is in Vermont. Jason, what's happening?
How's it going, guys?
How we doing, Jason?
I got a question. His name, Marshall. He's we got him for 2 years, correct?
Brandon Marshall, 2-year deal, correct.
Is there any chance that in the 2-year time that maybe we can convert Ingram to a wide receiver? He's about the same size as Marshall to pick up that slack.
Pick up what slack, though? You mean you're talking about 3 years from now when Brandon Marshall's not on the team, you're worried about having another wide receiver? They could test the free agent market or draft somebody by that time.
I'm talking about a big body, you know. They're about the same size. You know, having a definite big body on the team already.
Well, I mean, I get what you're saying, but if he solidifies the tight end position, then if you move him, now you're going to have to find somebody similar to the tight end position. So why not leave him in his position where he's thriving by that time? And then, like I said, between free agency and the draft, you could very well go and get a guy in similar size to Brandon Marshall. Why would you now create two voids when you could only have one void?
That's true. I was just thinking that, like, another option maybe if need be. Say there's a good tight end out there that's a blocker and a receiver. You know, Ingram hasn't proved that yet, but he could be a good blocker. But say he doesn't work as a blocker but just a receiver, and come down the line we get there's someone in the draft that's a great blocker and great receiver.
I'm going to make this really easy for you, okay? The Giants believe that Evan Ingram has enough versatility to do so many different things in their offense that they're virtually considering him as a Swiss Army knife. So I would think, unless he falls flat on his face, that 2 or 3 years from now, they'll have something for him to do, regardless of what it is. So don't you worry about that.
Yeah.
I think he'll be getting some passes thrown to him.
I agree.
I think he'll be taking some snaps on the field, and I think he will be able to put forth some production. No matter what you call him and no matter where he's lined up, if he's any good, he'll be helping the team.
Yeah, yeah. I got a bold prediction that both defensive ends will have 10-plus sacks. Snacks will have 3-plus sacks, and whoever plays next to Snacks will have a sack and a half.
Okay. I don't know if that's a bold prediction, but certainly appreciate the prediction, Jason. I mean, he's really going across the defensive line. Thanks so much for weighing in. We talked on previous shows about whether or not this could be a season that JPP and Vernon could actually both surpass 10. I've always thrown out, keep in mind, Vernon's only done it once in his career, and JPP has done it twice, but, you know, he's got to stay durable. That's the big thing for him.
You know, if you really wanted to make a bold prediction, you could have given a sack to Lance.
That's true. That would have been a bold prediction right there. Exactly. The chances of me recording a sack, that I think would have taken some real real bold predictions to grab out of there. And then in terms of Snacks, you know, if Snacks does get three, which I don't think is a stretch, that would be then a new career high for him. He already set a career high last season with 2.5. So, I mean, it's possible he very well could surpass that number this season. I think that's something that's realistic.
You know, one thing we do know, the Giants would like to get more consistent heat on the quarterback this year. They believe that the health of Vernon will help them do that. The health also of JPP, who missed the last month of last season with the groin situation. They think that will help them do that as well. They're hoping that Okwara continues to develop. They're hoping that they can get more pass rush out of Devon Kennard. They finally found a way, really, to use him last year to maximize his effectiveness. All of these things should add to the Giants' pass rush. Now, who gets the numbers individually? I don't know that that's as important as if they wind up with like 45 sacks as a team. That's the number, to me. That's the number you're looking at. Try to get 43, 44, 45 sacks. I always say like 43 is like 42, 43. You want to get at least
good
that
ballpark
number, you know? And I'm not as concerned as to the breakdown, okay? I can live with the fact that Olivier Vernon, sacks and pressures combined over like the last 4 years of the NFL, he's like top three in the league. I can live with that number because that means he's having an impact on the game. He's affecting the quarterback. That's fine. Whether or not he gets the 10 sacks or JPP gets 15, I don't care about those individual numbers.
You don't get brownie points for that. It's just really individual accolades. I just was counting the tally from last season, Paul. 14 different players had at least a half a sack last season, just to give you an idea of how the distribution went. But I think what was also noticeable about last season, now this is still a shaky stat because it's hit or miss, there were a number of players in the secondary that chipped into the total. So that's an added bonus if guys like Landon Collins, Janoris Jenkins, even Leon Hall had a sack last year, you know, off corner blitzes or situations where the defensive line gets so much pressure that the corners can take advantage.
I'm going to give you guys two numbers, and if these numbers are hit, it means the Giants are cooking. If they get 45 sacks as a team and 20 interceptions as a team, they had 36 sacks last year?
Last year they had 35.
35 and 17 picks.
They had 17 picks.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's not unreasonable to say get those numbers up to 45 and 20. That's not that much more. But if this defense is going to seek and get some of the improvement from some of the younger fellas, you know, Okwara, B.J. Goodson helping him out some in the middle and so forth. The development of Apple, Darian Thompson hopefully getting some picks. If they can come up to 45 and 20, I think those benchmarks would bode very well for this being a very strong contender.
I think that's a good number in both categories. I mean, don't forget also, you know, if you get forced fumbles and you recover those, you know, that's another area that could help you if you're not as opportunistic with the interceptions. Last year they had 17 forced fumbles. They recovered 8 of them. I mean, if you could get those two numbers up too, you know, that's something else that could create opportunities, extra possessions for your offense.
You know,
that's the goal.
I don't have the numbers offhand on this, but it does seem to me that the Giants are not real good in fumble recoveries.
Well,
over the
case
years,
in point from last year.
Over the years, it's not like their opponents don't cough it up. It's just that the ball seems to bounce back to the opponent like a magnet. The Giants don't seem to get a lot of fumble recoveries. They don't get their share, which is always a shame because you'd like to see the turnover number get better. It seems as though they have to earn their turnover numbers by getting picks.
Let's head back to the phone lines. We've got Charlie in Portland. Charlie, what's happening?
Hey, gentlemen. How you doing today?
Hi.
Doing all right, Charlie. How's things with you?
Hey, good. Things are good, but I got to put some reality on this.
Of course. what else is new?
I mean, for one thing, just talking about the safeties, I just don't think Berhey will be on the team just because, you know, this guy hasn't been able to play without getting a concussion, and I don't see how that's going to change. He hasn't hit anybody yet, but he will be soon. So I don't think he's going to be the fourth safety going into the season. Like I said, I just don't think he's going to make the team because of his injury proneness, with concussion. On the O-line, I just don't understand how the organization can leave this O-line in such a state of disrepair. And the reason I'm saying that, because our tackles are suspect at best, even if they play a little better. There's no plan B. There's nobody behind them. Just like you were saying, Paul, we got to take a guy who's been playing guard for the last 2 or 3 years and put him in tackle because we don't have enough sense to go out and get a swing tackle,
a left tackle, or a right tackle.
Charlie,
give me half a second here. First of all,
sure.
Duke Nacho, who is a veteran on this team, he would probably be the guy battling with Berhe as the fourth safety. Now, if you don't think Berhe's going to make it, that's fine, because I understand his injury history makes me suspect too. I don't really have a lot of confidence in him being able to stay on the field. So Nacho is probably going to be the fourth safety.
Been with Denver and Washington.
All right. At least that's a guy who's been through the wars before.
Yeah.
Okay.
We got a backup there.
Okay. All right. So let's put that issue aside. In addressing the offensive line, Friday's game against Pittsburgh is live on NFL Network. So you're up in Maine. You'll have the chance to see it. I guess you have that channel, right?
Yeah,
okay.
I do. I'll
do me a favor. Do me a favor. Relax. Kick back with some pretzels. Have yourself a soda,
can
a beer.
Can he relax?
Whatever it is that you need to have. And watch that game, and then call us back on Monday, and we will discuss more about the offensive line. Because right now, here's the point. The guys they got are the guys they got. They had salary cap dealings with that they had to deal with. Last year, they brought the defense up, and they did a great job. This year, they got some offensive skill positions. They also brought in Fluker. And if you've heard anybody talk about Fluker in the last month, you know how much he has helped this team. He is going to be dynamite for these guys. I know he's a guard. I get that. You're worried about tackle.
Right. Exactly.
Charlie, I share your concerns, but you can't freak, okay? You can't freak because here's the deal. You can't fix every single hole at once. You can't.
You can't. You've got to have a backup plan.
The backup plan is Justin
Pugh. Who can come in.
The backup plan, Charlie, the backup plan is Justin Pugh to left tackle. And DJ Fluker and DJ Fluker to left guard. That's the backup plan right now.
Remember, Fluker's also Fluker has taken some reps at right tackle.
Yeah, but he's not a left tackle.
I was talking about right tackle. Meaning, if I said left tackle,
yeah, but
he's saying
he's saying what's the plan at left tackle?
Well, but the plan at left tackle could be Justin Pugh. You know, let's see what happens with Chad Wheeler. I'm not telling you to feel confident. I mean, he's still a young guy. We don't know if he's going to make the
roster.
It's
a thin spot, yeah. Charlie. It's a thin spot.
But my point is,
we get it.
But here's my point, Charlie. To be fair, though. And I'm not saying that there aren't some question marks, but to be fair, and this is where it's important to put things in perspective, if you went around the league, Charlie, and you looked at every single NFL team, the 31 other teams, you'd be very hard-pressed. And go ahead and do this and tell me that every single team has a legitimate backup left tackle, a veteran polished left tackle, in the event that their starter goes down, that in the blink of an eye, they are not concerned because they have a proven commodity. Not many teams have that. Let's be honest, Charlie.
Yeah, but at least they have a left tackle that is actually probably fairly good.
Well, but you know what? Even if there's two or three teams, that's not the majority. Case in point, the Jacksonville Jaguars found out Brandon Albert retired and now supposedly wants to come back. Cam Robinson is their backup plan. Cam Robinson was a second-round draft pick out of Alabama. He hasn't played one NFL snap. So how are you gonna sell me on the fact that Jacksonville has as better of a backup plan as the Giants do?
Well,
that's my
point. I would give the Jaguars a six-round pick and bring Albert in here and pay him. That's what I would do.
Well, I'm not surprised that that's your recommendation.
And you'd have a guy who could play left and right, and you'd have a veteran presence, whether you wanted to move flowers or not.
Charlie, based on the veteran free agent left tackles who are on the street as we speak, and remember, Ryan Clady has retired, by the way. I don't know if you saw that.
I know.
Again, we told you he was shot.
It killed him when he retired,
right?
by the way.
We told you he was shot. Obviously, he knows he's shot. King Dunlop, okay, from the Chargers, who played with DJ Fluker, is the best option available on the street right now. Do you really think that that's the best option for the Giants today? Honestly, come on.
Don't forget Will Beatty.
That's not happening.
It was only a matter of time.
Okay, guys, all I'm saying is if this season sinks, it's going to be because of this old line. It's going to be because of our tackle.
All right, Charlie.
I'm saying.
All right, Charlie.
Okay, guys.
Well, I think, Charlie, you'll have more to talk about as we see more preseason games. And then I think there's a little
enjoy
bit more
the game Friday
to that conversation. Appreciate the phone call. I want to head to Twitter before we wrap up the program here. A number of people weighing in on a variety of different topics.
If Charlie had his way, he'd bring back Brad Benson.
He would bring back a guy from the 1950s if Charlie was capable of doing anything, Paul. I mean, at this point, he's living in the past more so than he's living in the present day or even in the future.
You know, it's not like left tackles are growing on trees.
No, they are not, and that's my point. My point is, honestly, and I'll do it. I'll do it for tomorrow's program. I will go and I will look at the depth chart of left tackles across the league, and I will tell you, just off the top of my head, knowing that if a team loses its starting left tackle, Paul, it's very unlikely that they have a polished, really good option that's immediately going to step in. It's going to require, for most teams, Paul, it's going to require taking another guy from another spot on the O-line and moving them to
like
left tackle.
Like I just told you.
Or it's going to require giving them an opportunity to just get a rookie in the mix and do a little baptism by fire. That's how most teams operate.
It's going to be a double move. Yeah. That's what's going to happen. That's going to be your best option.
Most teams do that.
That and a bottle of Excedrin.
Yes, you may need that. All right, let's head to Twitter here real quickly. At Mark FRM Chicago, do you think against the first O-line will get more playing time than others to help them get snaps, gel, and assess the improvement? So I guess Mark's referring to the first preseason game. Do we anticipate that the starting offensive line will get more snaps than maybe any other starting
I would think group? So. I would think so.
I would think that they'd want to get, you know, especially guys like Eric Flowers and Bobby Hart, you know, those two in particular, I don't think it hurts for them to get some additional opportunities. Okay, John at JFee76, any chance Webb shows enough in camp at preseason games to earn the second quarterback job, or is he locked as a third quarterback no matter the performance? This is my personal opinion. I think he's locked in as the third because I don't think they're in a position where they need to rush him along, and I think that either they get Geno Smith or Josh Johnson to perform admirably in the preseason that they feel good that that could be a backup for Eli Manning.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. However, again, back to my bold prediction of a few weeks ago, I do think Davis Webb is going to take a regular season snap this year because there'll be circumstances that they'll be able to get him in there and at least allow him to have a taste of a real game. But no, he is the number three.
And real quickly, last comment, Big Dash at ColeWiss88. He says, we got to go six wide receivers. We can't have five. I'd rather lose Ty than Lewis or King. So he's saying he'd rather sacrifice the tight end spot to keep six. But, you know, here's the thing. You got a lot of versatility at tight end. And, you know, if they feel Ellison can also serve as a fullback, does that mean they want to keep an extra tight end just in case of injury or something like that? Do they like what LaCaw shows? I think it's a very difficult decision that they're going to have to wait and see what happens in the preseason.
And quite honestly, too, some of the nicks and bumps and bruises you get during training camp force you to keep an extra guy at a specific position because let's say you think a guy's going to be nicked up for the first month of the season. And it's like, well, no, we can't have that. And all of a sudden you find yourself keeping an extra guy at that position even though you didn't want to. You didn't plan to. It's like we need to do it. And somebody's got to pay the price for that.
So that's going to wrap up today's program. Appreciate all the phone calls. Appreciate all the tweets. Practice is getting underway. We'll have full updates and reports on Giants.com later today. And then BBKL back up and running tomorrow at 10 a.m. Eastern.
6 p.m. tonight, MSG, Giants Training Camp Live. I'll be on with Sean O'Hara.
For Paul DeTito, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your day right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.